Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Underground Grad School. Classes that begin in November include What's the Buzz About Bees, Criminal Law, Rewilding 201, and more. Portland Underground Grad School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over the Portland metro area. Information about registering, teaching classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, are touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs on the KBOO airwaves since 1978, the longest-running feminist radio broadcast program in the country. Bread and Roses is a collective of women and non-binary radio activists who give voice to those in global and local spaces working for social justice and equity, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun. We want our bread and roses, too. I'm your host tonight, Cheryl Green. Our engineer is Lisa Loving. Tonight is an interview I recorded over the summer with filmmaker Gigi Williams, actress Ashley Williams, and counselor Dori Lyon about the new award-winning short film, Angela's Sacred Heart. A content and trigger warning, we do talk tonight about rape and sexual assault. While there are no graphic details, this is the focus of the short film, so our conversation touches on these kinds of trauma. Please practice self-care in listening to this episode or not. Before we get started, just a few tidbits on things happening around Portland this weekend. Tomorrow, October 22nd, the Oregon Ehlers-Danlos Syndrome Conference is happening at the OHSU South Waterfront Campus's Collaborative Life Sciences Building. Conference info is at oreds.org. This will be super informative, and it runs 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m., the Vanport Mosaic is screening a short documentary. It's called Lost City, Living Memories, Vanport Through the Voice of Its Residents. The screening starts at 2 p.m. at PSU's Smith Memorial Student Union. This is part of the Portland State of Mind events. The event is free, and the screening is going to be followed by a really fascinating talkback. Check out this crucial capturing of Vanport's history. And Wobbly Dance and Echo Theater Company are co-hosting a Mixed Abilities, All Abilities dance workshop on the 22nd. They invite movers of all abilities and backgrounds to share, explore, and connect through our unique physical languages and bodies. The workshop includes a guided warm-up and then open space for improvisation, experimentation, and playfulness. Musicians are also welcome to come improvise. The event is open to people of all ages and people with various disabilities. There will be an ASL interpreter present for the entire dance jam. The location is Echo Theater Company at 1515 Southeast 37th Avenue. Check out details on Facebook under Wobbly Dances Events. And let them know you're coming by emailing Yulia at yulia@wobblydance.com or calling 206-372-2372. Please note that this event is scent-free. Please only use scent-free detergents and body products. And out of respect for people with chemical sensitivities, please refrain from using fabric softeners, perfumes, and scented deodorants. They thank you very much. And lastly, this Saturday and Sunday at 7 p.m., the Clinton Street Theater is hosting a screening of Ovarian Psychos. The film follows an unapologetic bicycle crew of young Latina misfits from East Side Los Angeles. By the light of the full moon, they ride the streets together, seeking sisterhood as protection from violence in their neighborhoods and broken homes. They've been around since 2010, bicycling for the purpose of healing, reclaiming their neighborhoods, and creating safer streets for women on LA's East Side. This is October 22nd and 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. All right, let's get to the interview. Angela's Sacred Heart follows a character named Angela through the traumatizing events of a rape. The film is based on Gigi Williams' real-life experiences as a young woman, and she co-wrote, executive produced, and co-directed the film. In a fascinating creative move, Gigi cast her own daughter, actress Ashley Williams, in the lead role of Angela. I had the enormous pleasure of sitting down to talk with Gigi and Ashley, as well as Portland area counselor Dori Lyon. Dori was instrumental in providing support and encouraging self-care for both Gigi and Ashley through the filming process. I can't say enough about how excited I am to support a Black female filmmaker in getting more attention for her film. We all know the industry is famous for giving the most attention and most funds to artists firmly rooted in the white patriarchy. On top of that, as we talked, it became clear that a whole new way of working in film is really possible. I've certainly never talked to someone who provided emotional support for story creators and the people portraying extreme drama for the camera. But why not? What better way to nurture people's souls and their ongoing creativity? Thank you to the whole creative team that made the film possible. And thank you to Gigi, Ashley, and Dori from that team for meeting with me. I can't wait for the public release of Angela's Sacred Heart. Today's music is from Violeta Paivenkakra.
Hello, my name is Ashley Nicole Williams. I am an actress starring in it and producer on the project of Angela's Sacred Heart.
Hello, I'm Dori Lyon, and I was a production assistant support for the director, Gigi Williams, on the Angela's Sacred Heart.
Hello, my name is Gigi Williams, and I am the writer, co-director, and executive producer of Angela's Sacred Heart.
And I have weird connections to you two, but not to you, Dori, but maybe we'll uncover one. So, Ashley, I was a videographer for a project that you were an actor on. How many years ago? Three, four?
Two? I don't know. It was a few years back now when I think about it. That's so funny how that happens.
And then Gigi, you were so generous to just show up from heaven, out of the blue, and do camera work for a show that I produced at Portland Community Media. And so I love that. And of course, I knew you two separately and didn't know you were related.
I know, weird.
Yeah. So the goal of today's conversation is to uncover the secret connection that we have.
Finding Dori.
Finding Dori.
I've been waiting to figure that
You've
out.
You've been waiting for somebody to say that?
I've been waiting to say it.
I think
it's one of those moments, yes, in time where I wish my name was different. That's for sure.
Gigi's been waiting forever to say that. Finding Dori.
Get your life together. Okay.
Well, in the meantime, we can talk about the movie a little bit too. So, you raised funds a while back on Indiegogo. I'm so grateful that you made this movie.
Thank you.
So, I would love to hear what it is and how it was created, or where the story came from.
It's based on my own life experience. And so it takes a lot of courage to step forward and tell that story. And because it had a tremendous traumatizing impact on my life. And it continues to affect me in other ways. And this is why I decided to want to tell the story so that it could help other people and raise awareness about the traumatizing impact that it can have on you. And long term as well. I don't think enough is being done about this. I don't think enough is being talked about this. And probably because, you know, of the shame and the guilt and all the feelings you have around it and being blamed for it. Like somehow it's your fault and you caused it because you shouldn't have had too much to drink and you shouldn't have been wearing that outfit and it was just inviting trouble. And it puts the woman in responsibility. And it takes two people. and the man is also responsible. And that really does get overlooked a lot, even though it's not an easy subject to talk about. And even during the filming, it was very difficult for me, especially during the rape scene, because it brought back a lot of painful, traumatizing memories. And then watching my daughter going through it, it was just overwhelming. So I just need to make sure that I kind of go slow and take care of myself while I'm sharing the story.
And thank you. Having been perpetrated against myself too, I can say that I have some experiences around this stigma and shame and keep quiet and don't tell anybody, it must have been my fault kind of thing. And until we raise more awareness, we're not going to be able to get to that next step of what you said about, you don't just wake up the next day and you're better. The trauma can stay in you forever and it can color everything. And without hearing that from you, people don't realize that. So I appreciate you saying that part. I appreciate all of it that you're doing and saying. And Dory, you played a role in what Gigi's saying around taking it slow and taking care, right?
Right. I think just being on the set, we identified that watching it, obviously, it was almost like a residual trauma, watching it again and then having your daughter be you at that age. And I think we even questioned whether we wanted that scene or if it was even needed. Sometimes you don't need to see it for it to be a good film. I know that was hard. I think we weren't even in that room when they did that exact scene. We had to leave.
Right.
Remember that? Yeah. And we just spent a lot of time just processing her emotions and what she was going through.
Yeah. Out of respect for the fact that this is real, trauma is real. Mm-hmm. And thinking of trauma is actually trauma.
Yeah.
So do you want to talk about, are you comfortable talking about what it was like for you to play kind of the character of your mom?
It was really surreal. I felt like I had a lot of outer body experiences where I don't feel like, I just felt like there was, I don't know, like I wasn't, it was really hard. Like Dory was very supportive actually, because you work with patients that have experienced trauma in their lives. Yes. So from hearing the experience from when I was younger, from my mom telling me her story, and then us doing the film later, years, like a decade later, you know, deciding to do the film, hearing what happened, I empathized with her so much that I felt like it was necessary to tell the story. Then when we were actually doing it, I felt really odd. Like I just felt really like, it just wasn't like a normal movie that I was doing or working on. Since it was my mother, and it's something that happened to her, and then also my other friends that I've spoken to have had these experiences as well, I just felt very responsible for making sure the story was done right, and that people felt like they were validated, you know, for the feelings they had and the experience they had. It was such an odd feeling, right? Like on the set, that it was like the second day we were shooting, and it was like the hospital scene and stuff. It was just such an odd, like even the feeling in the room, everybody knew like something really traumatic was about to happen, or like they just understood the gravity of the situation. So everybody was very, like, I don't know, heavy. Mm-hmm. I felt like a heaviness in the room. So.
And I think that's important too when filming issues that have so much trauma, that everyone on set, I think it was very good. Everyone was good. Creating spaces for you as an actress to kind of go off and
that was so hard.
Reconnect to yourself and you know, get through all the emotions that came up for you as well.
Well, I think we were talking outside before we started the scene, and she was like, "How are you feeling? Are you okay?" And I was like, "I think I'm fine. It's okay." And then I started like bawling and crying, and she pulled me in the room and was like, "It's okay. It's okay." I was like, I don't know. I'm just really upset right now. Like, I can't remember what I was saying. I don't remember what
you
I was saying.
You were just hurting.
I was just really.
And you were empathizing for your
I was just really
story.
Feeling it. Like, and I was so, so like sad.
It seemed like it. That's okay though, you know?
It was really, so Dory was a big help, and so was my mom too. Like, everybody was very like supportive of the whole situation, you know.
We tried to protect her and not have too many people in the room at the time, because Dory was saying, we don't need all these camera people in there. We don't need all these onlookers. Just get everybody out who doesn't have to be there.
Yeah.
And that was really good advice. That was helpful too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We just wanted to communicate. And I think Ashley did a very good job of that. The emotions, the feelings, the heaviness, the sadness, the fear, the overwhelm. Yeah. You know, how one night can change your whole life. And that's what we hope the audience will grasp when they watch this, because I don't think people take it seriously enough. They don't understand the traumatizing effects it has on the victim. And that's what I want to try to use film to do, is to communicate. Roger Ebert said that movies is a machine that generates empathy. And I think that's what we need in this world. I think that's what we need in this country. I think that's why there's so much violence and so much going on right now, because we just don't have enough empathy for one another.
And it's really missed in some films. It's about action, adventure, and to move through the empathy which you felt, which I think create another layer for you as an actress, right? So here you are acting, but then you have this other layer that felt real. Because in acting, does it feel real? I mean, there's two layers going on for you.
It felt really real, just because when we were getting ready to do the film, before we were able to actually go into production for it, I had so many of my friends, male and female, talking to me about their experiences with sexual assault. And I was just like, this is so important for us to tell this story. And so when we were doing the hospital scene is when I really started to feel it. Like, it became real, because I was imagining what that was like for people. For a woman, you know, having to deal with that and have to go to the doctor and like, and this is your, and you're alone and you can't, you're not talking to anybody about this experience. And I just thought of like all the people, all the women who've had to go through this. Mm-hmm. And it just made me so sad.
It's interesting what you said about the media and empathy, because we have tons of media addressing this, but we don't have the empathy yet. And I think what's missing is more people with the direct lived experience being in control of which stories are told and how they're told.
And how they're edited,
That's really a great idea. You're right about that.
Well, I got that because you made the movie. It was your idea. I was just reflecting.
Okay, thanks, Cheryl.
But it's what you're talking about is, you know, this topic exists in the movies, but it's not working to help end
it. It's not working. It's not.
And you look at the way it's framed, especially when you're looking, when you break things down by gender and when you break things down by race and ethnicity, and how we talk about perpetrators and how we talk about victims and who gets re-victimized in the media. And so having you in control of your own story, that's what we need more of.
You know, I don't know how it is today, but especially when I was younger and I was coming up, I couldn't talk to anyone about it. There's a stigma attached to it that actually changed the whole course of my life. You know, I wanted to go to college. I had all these dreams that I wanted to fulfill for myself and my life, and I got totally sidelined by it. And my relatives and my family, my parents, my cousins and aunts and uncles, they totally ostracized me from the rest of the family.
Because they knew it had happened to you?
They knew that it had happened to me, yes. And they knew that I was pregnant, but I was a bad girl. That was another label that was stuck onto me that added more shame. Mm-hmm. It is really hard to try to dig yourself up out of those type of holes.
Right.
Alone.
Alone. Too. By yourself and being traumatized
and
at the same time.
Trauma changes our brain chemistry. It lowers our serotonin, which is directly linked to depression. So it makes sense that after trauma, it's hard to, right? It took years.
I was depressed for a long, long time and in and out of abusive relationships because I felt worthless. I felt like these things happened to me because I was unworthy. And my family was ostracizing me because I was bad and I was unworthy, because I had grown up with that good and bad, right and wrong, you know?
And it also was a time, I remember correctly, remember how they were blaming the victims that their skirts were too short? It was kind of like in the late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. And there was always this blame, even in the news, towards the women that, you know, were raped.
Well, the media, like we said, always slanted against the victim. You know, they're not requiring the perpetrator to take responsibility for his actions. And I remember as a, you know, a young woman after this attack, like I said, I ended up getting involved in many relationships, difficult, challenging, abusive type relationships, and I couldn't understand how to break the pattern. And so that has been my journey in life, determined to break the pattern, and mm-hmm. not only for myself, but for my children and for our future generations and our family. And I think we've done a pretty good job. You know, my daughter is a very big success in her own right and going off to Rutgers University. I have another daughter who's happily married with three small children. I have a new grandbaby. We have a wonderful life, you know, but I had to work really hard to try to break that cycle and try to share that knowledge and wisdom with my kids to give them some self-value. And I did not want to expose them to that kind of major dysfunctional type of relationship that I grew up with. I remember when in my first relationship after the rape, it was really kind of ingrained in me, or, you know, it made a powerful impression because I was determined I was not going to live the same life that my parents had. I did not want to repeat that pattern. I did not want to repeat those mistakes. You always want to create a better life for yourself, and you want your kids to even have an even better life, right? Everybody does. And so I remember this first relationship, it started off really nice. The guy was charming and sweet and everything. And then he flipped on me. It was just part of the pattern. And I started seeing that pattern. But I'd call the police and they wouldn't do anything. I would call the police and they'd tell me that I should leave the house. He was not arrested. He was not handcuffed. He was just like, you need to calm down. Maybe you should leave the house until he calms down. And so I was told that many, many times that it was my responsibility. And after Nicole Brown Simpson, how she had gotten slain and beaten, and she'd been calling the police, and they simply ignored her. And they'd come out to the house. Sometimes they wouldn't even bother to come out because it was O.J. Simpson. And so those kind of things, you know, just really, I felt it, how we need to make some changes in this culture, yeah. In our culture.
And to not be taken serious.
Yeah, to not be taken seriously. Yeah, it was another wound. And here's more men coming in and saying, you know, we don't take you seriously. You know, we're not going to mm-hmm. protect you. I basically felt like I was on my own. It's heavy, mm-hmm. I know. But I think the story, like you said, needs to be told. Because if it happened to me, that means it's happening all over.
You talked about the pattern. You had patterns in your family, but this incident started another pattern where you were in multiple abusive relationships. Mm-hmm. And then you were describing this pattern that our entire society seems to be trapped in or trapping ourselves in, mm-hmm. and to continue to put it on the victim and excuse the perpetrator. So we're all, like as a greater society, we're in this dysfunctional pattern of continuing to excuse it. Boys will be boys. No. That these narratives,
yes. The narratives are what is harming, and that's where it changes, is changing the narrative and the labels and not having labels, actually. But like with the police system, I think there needs to be more funding for after trauma care, you know, that they go to this scene, yeah. of this, you know, rape or what have you, and then they just write a report, if they do, and, mm-hmm. and leave, and then they're left
what
in this hollow
do?
Place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think we need more funding for mental health supports, because right now we just have fringe supports. It appears we have these mental health supports, but they're not going to what they need to go to, or to the women and yeah. who need this support, and the counseling for the men, right? With the toxic masculinity uh-huh. that's out there.
So you put this screenplay and this film together decades after your assault. If you're willing to, if you could imagine back to 1 year after the incident, what do you think that Gigi would think about the film that came out this year?
Wow, that brings tears to my eyes. Because mm-hmm. I think that it would have made a difference. I think it would have made a big difference. And it's a miracle. I mean, when I look at my life today, I can see that it's been a long journey, and I've come through a lot, and I have accomplished a lot under the circumstances. I think I've done quite well for myself. That's basically the reason why I wanted to do this film is to be an inspiration, not only for other young women out there to know that they're not alone, and there's help out there available for them. And if I can do it, then they can make it through too somehow. I think somebody needs to be the light keeper, the lighthouse or something, and say, come this way. We're okay. I got your back.
Yeah.
Come this way. This is a safe path to take, and you're not the only one out there.
Right. And when I think of the word inspiration, I know a lot of people say, oh, that was so inspiring. And they go back to their life exactly how it was before whatever that thing was. So when I think of inspiration, I think of taking action of some sort. And whether that action is that you change your mindset or you go do something. And you talked about coming down that path. And this is podcasting. Nobody can see. You had your arms extended and you were waving to all of these current and future generations of people. That's real inspiration. And that's what I hope will come from you being so vulnerable, all of you, and bringing this story out, is that it's going to change things. It's going to change how people act and react.
Ashley was saying that when we were sharing this story with people, we were talking about making the film. We were surprised by the reaction, a powerful reaction. And I think Ashley mentioned something about that earlier, that so many people that we talked to said, this is very important. Mm-hmm. You need to do this. I'm so glad you're doing this. And it happened to me.
Yes.
Or they knew someone who it had happened to, their sister, their mother. It's becoming like a normal thing. Just like young men being, you know, profiled by the police. I mean, it should be the exception to the rule, not the norm. I have little grandchildren, and I have, you know, nieces and cousins and stuff like that who are growing up in this world, and they don't have the kind of support that they need to make it through this life. And I want to try to give them that.
Yeah. And you are. Yeah, you're giving them that. You're a leader in this.
If you are just tuning in, this is Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Cheryl Green, and I'm talking with Gigi Williams, Ashley Williams, and Dori Lyon. The song you just heard is from Sandy by Violeta Paivankakara.
When we premiered it at the Hollywood Theater, we were sold out. Everybody was there. And after the film aired, we had so many different women coming up to us. One lady was crying in my arms, another lady's crying in my mom's arms, like talking about how this happened to me. And then another lady's like, this happened to my mom and I can't believe this was her experience. And it was just like such an, I think there is something in not being able to ignore it anymore. And then when you realize this is something that has happened to other people, I'm not the only one. And then it kind of like invigorate, like gives you that energy to like want to help others too. Because I've had a lot of emails being sent to me, like it's my mom's story, but they're like, oh my gosh, did this happen to you? I'm like, it did not happen to me, fortunately, you know, but I feel they feel identified with me because I'm in the film. And so they send me all these emails and messages and stuff saying like, this happened to me and what can I do to help? Can I help, you know, or like, do you know if there's anything? I'm like, you should probably get into counseling or something. Like, you know, if you haven't really worked through this, you should talk to someone. Don't just, you know, so that you can be help of someone else. So, yeah.
Exactly. And it starts, you know, education, right? In high school. And there's, you know, teaching our young adults healthy sexual health, right? Discussing it, not just focusing on standardized testing scores. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's about socializing. It's about boundaries, teaching them all of these life skills that they're really not, I don't feel, are learning necessarily in the high school settings, because it's such a perfectionistic system.
Yes.
You know, that where they're missing just the basics of how, you know, how to respect another person, you know, and their boundaries and that humanity and dignity part of connection. So when they go to college, it's their images are Jersey Shore and all of these other things from MTV or what have you that have influenced them. They think this is party and this is how it goes. And I just think they're kind of lost, or some of our young adults are just very lost. They don't have the best role models for that. And then I think the school systems are failing us too. It's my 2 cents on that.
And the media as well. You just mentioned how they get a lot of powerful messages from the media.
You bet. Exactly.
So you've mentioned that you hear a lot of this happened to me, this happened to me, this happened to my mother.
Yes.
Are you getting any response from the other side, from someone who has either perpetrated or witnessed or could potentially be a perpetrator and is understanding that and wanting to not perpetrate?
I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that part of it. Was it you, Ashley, or someone at the premiere? A gentleman. And the talk back.
That's what I'm thinking of, too. I think we're talking about the same guy.
We're thinking about the same person. And he said that he was a man. And after watching his film, he feels ashamed to be a part of the male sex, he said, because of he knows these things do happen.
Yeah. Did he take it a next step of, I'm going to join a men's empowerment group, I'm going to join a men's against violence group, or maybe he doesn't even know those exist.
Maybe he doesn't know.
Right.
Yeah. We try to provide information in the film and the credits about where you can go to for women can go for resources and phone numbers they can contact if they need help or they if they have been sexually assaulted to get the help that they need and the support that they need. But it's a good idea to try to provide some information for the men as well because they don't know where to go. And it probably would be a difficult thing for a man to stand up to and admit. And where does he go to get support for that?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
You know, of course, I'm glad men aren't coming up to you and saying, oh, I've raped a girl once. You know, I don't expect them to.
I don't know how we would respond.
Yeah, and you wouldn't actually want to be the ones to hear that.
No, I don't think.
And I think that is important. We don't want to silence the men. They need a space to get the help, too. Yeah.
They need to get the help to stop doing this. Because, I don't know, you don't have to sexually assault people. And I know that it... In some ways, it can be about sex, and in some ways, it's not even about sex.
It's about power.
It's control.
And control.
It's control and power often.
Someone said toxic masculinity.
Yeah, exactly.
Which people need to unlearn that. The other thing is, it's not just men assaulting women. It crosses genders. Obviously, men assaulting women would be the most common. But all of it is it's toxic.
Right.
One of the tools and the resources that I picked up to help me process a lot of the trauma that I have experienced in my life, I've gotten into spiritual programs, a lot of spirituality, 12-step programs, counseling, therapy. It takes a lot sometimes, but you know, you have that determined spirit and the willingness to want to grow, the willingness to want to heal. You know, the willingness and the love for yourself that you deserve to heal, that you deserve to live a happy life, you deserve to be loved and respected and honored and treated well. And I want my children to feel that way, too. So what I've learned is that, you know, you get into a spiritual program and it helps you to understand a lot of things beyond what the obvious. Yeah, the obvious is this needs to change. Right. And that's why I made the film, because we can start to create some positive social change. But I also believe that the reason it's coming up from a spiritual point of view is because it's time to stop. And I believe that when things start coming up consistently, it's a red flag. And it's like, pay attention to this. Mm-hmm. Pay attention, everybody. Listen to this. Watch what's happening. You know, this has to stop. We can't continue like this anymore.
Right.
You know, that's what happened in Nazi Germany. So many people died until finally people started to pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What would you say to someone who reached out and said, I know I need a counselor. I don't even know where to go or how to get one or find somebody who looks like me or knows how to talk to me?
Yeah, and I would say that's another failure of our system. Is one, access to healthcare. It's a confusing system. That's a whole nother talk show. And one, it would start, there's the Portland Women's Crisis Line. I highly recommend that. It's a volunteer, most of the women, they've been victims and what have you, and are advocates. So Portland Women's Crisis Line would be a start. The Multnomah County Crisis Line, just to call the 211 warm line to get started. Mm-hmm. And also, if you have if you're lucky to have insurance, that. But really, that's a whole nother system that needs to be easier to access for people. And then, of course, Psychology Today, you can be real specific with what you're looking for in a counselor. So that's a nice website or resource to start to find, you know, what the therapists are, what their specialties are. But I also think it's grassroots, you know, creating places within communities, even using the churches more as spaces for, you know, you could have a women's advocate group, you could just call it Survivors of Sexual Assault. Here, it's at our local church down the street. You know, getting back to the old-fashioned way of connecting in our little niche communities. You know, I don't think it needs to be so complex, but yet it is, you know, to get the help. But it'd be nice if our communities started doing more grassroots.
Don't they have other programs too, like Bradley Engelhaus?
Right. Yes. Yeah. And
Junior League of Portland, I think the women's group, the YWCA, a lot of them.
Right. And what's it, Jean's House, and a few others.
I think those are great tools, and I think that's good for like the Portland area. But we did give, I can't remember the name of the one that was like a national crisis line. Which one is the one you said?
There's Multnomah County crisis line, but definitely like national crisis lines as
and
well.
And then also, I mean, I don't have like really great insurance or anything like that, but when I'm on right now the Oregon Health Plan, OHP, I do qualify for free mental health care. So I am able to go to, you know, get a therapy and like work on things, which I have done. The process was a little difficult, but my mom gave me like, hey, call these people. I think they'll be able to use your insurance. And I said, okay, you know, and I called them, and then they give me this long list of things to figure out what exactly I need, you know, and what is it I'm trying to focus on. So I think if I needed, if I was like a victim of sexual assault, I think that through the OHP, I could have gotten, you know, assistance with my mental health and my trauma through that. And it could have paid for it.
And the emergency room, of course, if you've been assaulted right away, go to the emergency room. The social workers are wonderful, and the nursing staff at most emergencies.
And they'll probably have referrals for them at that time.
Get them connected. Yeah.
What about the stigma that some people feel? Do you come across people saying, I don't need help?
I think that's where we need to change. Even the word mental illness has a pretty harsh tone to it. Yes, we need that word to get more funding and for us to take it serious. But I also think it pulls people away from getting help. They don't want to be considered mentally ill. So maybe changing the language around it, similar to addiction. It's not, I'm an alcoholic. It's okay, I'm in over my head with drug and alcohol use right now. Maybe I'm self-medicating with drugs and alcohol right now. It doesn't mean I'm this terrible, wretched person, alcoholic. You know, I just think changing the language would start that, just where we can start to look at it differently with that negative label that goes with it. They're afraid to get help. They don't want to be considered crazy or this or that.
Or weak.
Yeah, or weak. And the reality is, how do you feel right now that it's there and it's out for the world?
I'm very hopeful, but I'm also realistic. Change takes place slowly. I don't think things change overnight. And it may be just a little small pebble, yet that starts a ripple effect. So that's trying to be realistic about where we are today in our society and in our culture, and respecting and accepting of all people. So I'm waiting to see what happened, but I'm hopefully optimistic. I was talking to my daughter about this the other day, and I said, we just need more people to be courageous, and more people to come forward, and more people, you know, to support this work. And that's why I have the website that I just created, Angela's Sacred Heart, where we're going to continue to do more type of films and more work like this to just keep that going. You know, we don't want people to forget, and we don't want them to go back into their complacency again.
I'm like, all these things you've talked about are huge accomplishments on their own, but then all together, when you look at the decades of how far you've come, and then you made this film, which is courageous. Are you proud of what you've accomplished with this? Because you should be.
Yeah, I am. I mean, when you put it that way, of course, I don't ever even think about that. I just feel like, what's the next thing? What's the next thing I need to do? I'm just wanting to be of service. This is my offering. And I feel like I have so much that I can give now. And I'm very excited about that. If I can make a difference and change one person's life, then I think it would have been a great success for me.
Yeah, you have a very generous attitude. Mm-hmm. And wanting to be of service and wanting to use this to be of service. Yeah. What about you now that it's out in the world or getting out in the world? How do you feel about it?
I feel really relieved and very just excited. It's nice to like share it with people because I've been working on this for years and trying to get it done. So it's just like really, really exciting. It's very cool. I'm very hopeful, and it's nice to have that conversation with people, and if they see a trailer or they saw it on the news or something, or they read about it, they're like, oh my gosh, that's your film. I'm like, yeah, and let's talk about what it is, you know, like, what is it about and how do you feel about that? And I'm just very excited.
You've got the website, you've got the Facebook page. What's next, or how do people see it?
Right now we're submitting it to film festivals, so it's like kind of private, so we can't like just make it public for anybody to see. But I think once after
September, October, when we're finished the whole film festival circuit,
then we can figure out a way to make it possible for people to watch it.
Great.
Online, possibly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe in the schools as well.
I definitely want to create a connection to schools and to get the message out to young people. I think that's going to be key in creating change in this culture, is you've got to start young and dig it out at the root. I'm currently involved with the Junior League of Portland, which dedicates itself to helping women and girls. And I'm going to be on a team there to help people who are victims of domestic violence. Also be studying to become a youth advocate for the YWCA, Young Women's Christian Association. So, and I believe that by creating these type of partnerships and these type of relationships, it will enable me to make more contacts and be able to get this film into schools and where it can really do some good, I hope, and maybe do some lecturing and create some PowerPoint type things. I think this is where it's a good place to start, a good beginning.
A good beginning.
Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of like playing it by ear, and the universe just seems to give me what I need.
I don't want to be too luxury, but I definitely think in education we want to bring in the component of healthy, responsible drug and alcohol use. You know, that if, you know, back to the buddy system, if your friend's getting too intoxicated and he's walking into a room with a gal who's practically fainted, like doing role plays where can teach them, what do you do in this scenario? How do you respond? Because we identified there was so much going on in party scenes, people that were part of the party that observed some of this. And if we would have had the ones who would sound the alarm, maybe this could be prevented.
Could have been prevented.
All, it's like a community, we're all part of this. That it's not just independent, this guy's taking this girl into the bedroom.
Hey, someone else maybe could have intervened.
Yeah, hey, are you okay with this? Is she clear? Is she coherent? That kind of stuff.
I've been in a role play like that where it was the guy at the party and the girl in that crucial moment, who's going to speak up or not. Yeah, and it was really powerful to be in that role play. I mean, I was 35 at the time, but it was really powerful to do it. And I'm like, I already finished being a teenager, but nobody else is volunteering to be in the role play. But I scared the guy, tall guy, and I was snuggling up to him on the couch, and then I just gave him a piece of my mind. He's like, yes, girls can do that. Yeah. We can tell you no.
We definitely want to start empowering women more.
Yeah.
That's important. And that brings to mind what Dalai Lama had once said or wrote. He said that the Western woman is going to either change the world or save the world. And I thought that was an interesting comment for someone like him to make, who's such a spiritual teacher, a spiritual leader, to say that the weight of that is going to rest on the shoulders of Western women. I read and looked it up a little bit more, and I think he was saying the reason for that is because even though we are oppressed in this country in many ways and victims of sexism, we still have the freedom that we can speak out and we can make films and write books and do things like that to help create the change in the world that we need to make. Mm-hmm. So that's my contribution, because I really believe that. I feel so passionate about it. I feel that because when the civil rights movement was taking place and everybody was like jumping on board with it, and it was just such an exciting time because change was in the air, and these people really were committed to that change and passionate about it, and great leaders were walking out in front, you know, and coming forward and stepping out, and people were flying from all over the world to march with Martin Luther King and people like that, when they could see it on television, the news, what was actually happening. And so I think that's where media can have a powerful mm-hmm. impact. You start to see these things, you start to recognize it, it raises awareness that creates change.
Yeah.
Women in film, my hope is we continue to support each other so we have our voices heard, like similar to your movie.
Yeah, the voices that you have, the power that you have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And start where you are.
Yeah.
And use your voice. Mm-hmm. Do what you can to contribute,
right,
to help make a difference one person at a time.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you want to talk about around the movie, your experience, something that brings you joy, the awards you're winning?
I'm raising funds right now on the new website to raise money to create the sequel, which is going to be even more exciting than the original. And it's going to dig even deeper into these issues that we need to talk about.
Yeah. Tell folks how they can find the film and find you online.
Just go on Facebook and then type in Angela's Sacred Heart. And then the website domain name
is angelasacredheartfilm.com.
Great. It's two S's, Angela's Sacred?
Yes.
Okay.
Two S's, angelasacredheartfilm.com. I just want to thank you so much for allowing us this opportunity.
Thank you.
Cheryl.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Giving us a voice. Yeah.
For giving us a voice. And that's, women need to help women. Mm-hmm. Women, it's so important.
Not block each other, so
yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so we can't, mm-hmm. we just can't let all this pettiness get in the way.
Yes.
We can't let all this racism get in the way. Women need to help women.
Yes.
Women need to support each other.
Yes.
That's where we're going to get our power from.
Since it had been a few months since I did the interview with Gigi, Ashley, and Dory, I called Gigi on FaceTime the other day just to check in and see how things were going with the film and what other work she was up to. Gigi, hi. Thanks for calling in today so I can update folks where you are. So let's see, we did the interview back in the summer. Have you been applying to film festivals or building other community partnerships?
Oh, yes. I have been very, very busy and having a really great time. I have started to develop, you know, networking and different community partnerships around the area. Men Engaging Now group. It's helping to raise awareness for men in the community, and it's in alignment with the YWCA. And I'm also a member of the Junior League of Portland. It's an organization of women committed to promoting volunteerism and focusing on domestic abuse. And so I've been doing some trainings to be an advocate, because I want to be able to help support women, you know, in that sense, because of what I've been through. And I've also joined another group called the Women of Color for Racial Justice. And, you know, that's about women, minorities from all around the world. It's a diversified group who are putting on a symposium in the spring to discuss the issues that women of color experience. and the type of challenges that we experience, you know, in this country, you know, in this culture. It's very, very exciting. It's just like all these new doors have begun to open up. And I love the fact that, you know, it's all these women groups trying to help support women and try to create positive change.
For you, it's always been bigger than the movie. And it sounds like it's going that way.
It's much, much bigger. It's much, much bigger than the movie. That's just the door that I wanted to open, just to share with other people. It's always nice to have another voice out there and to realize that you're not the only one and that you're not an invisible person in this society. And it has happened to other people besides you.
You are going to be on a show on Portland Community Media this weekend. Do you want to talk about that real quick?
Sure. I'm going to be on a show on Sunday, Straight Talk TV. With Tony Brown. It's going to be recorded, so it's not going to air on the same day. I'll be joining a panel of women, of activists in the local community who are going to talk about the election, and we're going to mainly talk about and focus on Donald Trump and the sexist remarks that he has made about women, the very inappropriate remarks he has made about women. And I just really feel that this is a time that women need to stick together. And we need to make our voices heard because this has been going on for much too long.
It won't be a live show, but folks can check out Portland Community Media. If you've got cable TV, it will eventually come up on cable access. I don't know how that works. I don't have cable.
Yeah, it will eventually come up on cable TV. And you can check with your local television provider, Comcast or something, and they will give you a list of the three network channels that it will appear on.
So I have a quick question about that, and I think that you'll address this in the show, but I'm so curious about how women can stick together through this at a time when there are so many women who are defending him and saying, oh yes, locker room talk, talk is talk, boys will be boys, men will be men. I'm so anxious about how women can get together and sort of overcome this desire to defend him as being harmless.
I don't blame the women. I believe that it is a result of the socialization of this culture. And that's what I'm trying to do with my work and with my writing and with my films, is to raise awareness, because I think a lot of us have just become numb, and you feel like there is no way to change it. So you just accept it, and then you just become number and number and number. And what happens is your boundaries continue to get pushed on. And if you don't want to be affected by it all the time, or feel anxiety or stressed out about it all the time, or feel like there's nothing that you can do or say that can change the situation to make it better, you just kind of shut down, and what a lot of people call denial. So we just minimize, and then we deny, and then we defend, because that's what we've been programmed to do. That's what we've been socialized to do. That's what we've been trained to do. We have to be willing to face the reality, as ugly as it can be. We can't change it until we're ready and willing to face it. You have to accept it. Yes, this is a reality. Yes, this is happening. Yes, this is wrong. Yes, this is inappropriate. Yes, this does not feel good. And do I want my children to grow up in a world like this? Do I want my daughters to grow up in a world like this? So once you start to really look at it and open your eyes and ask those tough questions, and then decide that you're going to make a choice and make a commitment and accept it, but you can't change anything until you can accept it first. And accepting doesn't mean you give into it. Accepting means you realize that this is a fact. This is your reality. And it doesn't feel good. And so what are you going to do about it? A lot of times people don't want to make that decision. So that's another reason why they go numb. Because that means I'm going to have to make some changes. That means I'm going to have to learn how to stand up for myself. That means I'm going to have to learn to speak out. That means I'm going to have to learn to make some tough choices. That means I'm not going to be able to walk in the world the same way I was before. And that's kind of a scary thing to do.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, thank you for coming on real briefly to just update us. And I look forward to having you back on the show a little bit down the road when you've got these community screenings going and more partnerships and more stuff you want to update us on. So thank you so much, Gigi.
Thank you so much, Cheryl.
You have been listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland. Thank you so much for listening. Many thanks again to our engineer and Evening Public Affairs Director, Lisa Loving. We always welcome new collective members, and if you're interested in joining us as a producer, host, or engineer, no experience necessary, please contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator at volunteer@kboo.org. You can connect with us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/breadandroses. There you can access our podcasts and share feedback or show ideas. And like us on Facebook, KBOO Bread and Roses. And we're on Twitter at Bread Roses Radio. We're going to go out today with an instrumental version of the song Love's in Need of Love Today, this one performed by Najee. We'll be back next Friday, 6 to 7 p.m., with more feminist news and public affairs. Thanks, everyone, so much for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Join me Friday, October 21st from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. for From the Grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and political commentary. On Friday, October 21st, we will continue with P-Funk and politics, where fantasy is reality, on 90.7 FM, KBOO.
Fantasy is reality.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2016 Portland Veg Fest, Saturday and Sunday, October 22nd and 23rd at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. Portland Veg Fest celebrates plant-based living with food samples, experts, and authors to discuss topics in health, animal welfare, and compassion, chef demonstrations, and more. Again, that's the 2016 Portland Veg Fest, Saturday and Sunday, October 22nd and 23rd at the Oregon Convention Center, Exhibit Hall A, 777 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.